Fasten your time machine belts. We're entering a portal to the past to discover erstwhile episodes and historical happenings. Broadcast by KYMN Radio, produced by the Northfield History Center, and hosted by Cosmo Esplin, this is Trek Through Time. Welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, to Trek Through Time. I'm your host, Cosmo Esplin. I'll admit, I have a bit of deja vu right now because I feel like I just said those words yesterday for some reason. You are not mistaken, because this is indeed part two of the Trek Through Time St. Olaf Band special. Yesterday, I spoke with Susan Vistendahl and Jeff Sove, authors of the St. Olaf Band biography, about basically the overview of the band from 1891 to 2018, which is the years the book covers. And today I'm very excited to get a whole new perspective on the band, particularly over the last couple of years. I will admit that I've weaponized the use of suspense, because I normally make the audience wait a few minutes before I reveal our memoir maestro for this episode, but guess what? I'm breaking tradition, believe it or not. I'm very excited to announce that today's guest will be none other than Dr. Timothy Marr, who was the conductor of the St. Olaf Band for 29 years. I'm very much looking forward to hearing from Dr. Marr and understanding his firsthand experience. But first, it's time for some timely tidings. Actually, for once I'm mistaken, I did this segment on the last episode. What to do? Alright, fine, cut the jazz music. We'll get straight to the axis of antiquity. But now I'm ultra confused, because do I use the drum roll sound effect or not? Because we already know what we're going to be talking about. Better play it safe. This month's axis of antiquity is still, drum roll please, the history of the St. Olaf Band. So I'm not going to go into detail here, because if you want to really get into the weeds on this, you can listen to the last episode. That's your punishment if you haven't listened yet. Basically, today we will be focusing on Dr. Timothy Marr's experience heading up the St. Olaf Band. He came to lead the band starting in 1994 and did that until 2023. And during that time, he oversaw the multiple tours that the band went on, a lot of successes, including a 2016 performance at Carnegie Hall, which actually kind of spurred Susan and Jeff to write the St. Olaf Band book. Dr. Marr was actually the one who recruited them to write the book, as Susan attested on the previous show. So clearly he has a great knowledge of how rich the history of the band is and what it represents in terms of academic culture and the Northfield community. Dr. Marr served as the seventh conductor of the St. Olaf Band. He succeeded Miles Mighty Johnson, who really revived the band in a lot of ways and led them for over 30 years. And Dr. Marr continued that revival with his own distinct approach to performing music and conducting the band as a whole. And though Dr. Marr retired in 2023, his impact clearly left a lasting influence on Dr. Henry Dorn, who is now conducting the band and has since late 2023. So we'll run over Dr. Marr's career in music. He's also a highly regarded composer in addition to conducting. And we'll look at the biggest events from the last few years since the book was published, which include winning the 2021 American Prize for Small College Band Programs and continuing to tour abroad. So, buckle up, because we're heading into the time machine with Dr. Timothy Marr to discover the rest of the history of the St. Olaf Band. Dr. Timothy Marr, thank you very much, sir, for coming in today to talk about the St. Olaf Band. It's a pleasure to finally meet you.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here as well.
Well, you are probably the second person I've interviewed who has a Wikipedia page, so the pressure is on me today to live up to the expectations here.
Yeah, but you can put anything on a Wikipedia page.
Well, then maybe I'll have to create one for myself. But, you know, I talked to Susan and Jeff yesterday, and they both spoke very highly of you. If you want to dig into a little bit, who is Tim Marr for us?
I think I'm an artist. I just turned 69, and I'm sort of finally owning that.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, this is probably what my life has been, as a teaching artist, you know, that kind of thing. And it's been interesting to reach that point in my life where I can feel pretty good about that. I've always been interested in sound itself. I started writing music when I was in eighth grade to impress the girls that I found interesting. And that was good for me, but it didn't really help all that much. But that's when I started making some music happen. I was writing for my high school buddies, brass players typically, and we'd play in church. And then I'd start, this was back when Chicago and Blood, Sweat, and Tears were these great horn bands back in the 70s, and I'd arrange music like that.
I love Chicago, by the way.
Oh, yeah. It's still a great listen, you know? And so I was arranging that stuff for the marching band and the jazz band, and eventually started writing my own music.
That was kind of the origin story for your musical career, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. So if you want to take us up to the time that you eventually made your way to St. Olaf as a student, and what was the impetus for that?
Well, the impetus for going to St. Olaf was just that I had a couple of friends at La Crosse Central High School that were going to do a campus visit and you could get out of school. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I'll go along on that. You know, it's down in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And it just so happened that it was their centennial year and they were having a centennial big concert,
sure.
Orchestra, band, everything down in Skoglund Auditorium.
This was probably early 70s then?
Yeah, or probably spring of 74, making the final visits,
mm-hmm.
going to college, you know, figuring out where to go to college. It was quite the display of high-level music making to hear all three of those ensembles at once. And I was convinced that that was the place for me. I thought for a while I was going to go into chemistry or something like this. But when I got into my junior and senior year in high school, I got to conduct the band when our band director had health concerns one year and his wife passed the other year and they said, who wants to conduct the band? My mom was a choir director and I watched her wave her arms around and have sound come out of those from when I was really little, you know, and so I thought, well, I'll raise my hand and give it a try.
Conducting is a fun thing to watch, isn't it?
Oh, it's even more fun to do.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, my Lord. Sure. I mean, right now, you talked, as we were visiting, you talked about hobbies. And for me, it's a painting right now with acrylics. And now, instead of taking a baton and going through the air and feeling a line of sound come out of that with color on it, I put paint on a palette knife and I go across a canvas and and it's the same sensation. So I'm having a really interesting time thinking about the cross relationships between the two, and it's informing my writing. I'm still composing a lot of music, and that's shifting because of what I'm experiencing as a painter right now.
It's interesting how two different art forms that you wouldn't think necessarily go together really coincide in a lot of ways, like you mentioned.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah. Artistry bleeds over into different forms, for sure. So when you were recruited into the band, what instrument did you play?
Trombone. God's instrument.
Yes, of course. Many people have spoken about the camaraderie that they felt being a part of that institution. There's a lot of documented letters and journal entries and so forth in this book. How did you feel being a part of that sort of culture and community?
Well, I think it's a surprise to everybody who comes in. When I was a student, you know, I was in the Norseman band my first year, and then I got into St. Olaf band my second year on the Hill. I don't think anybody is really quite ready or understanding, unless they had a sibling go through it, you know, older brother or sister. I think it surprises them just how caring that large ensemble can be for each other. We have a distinct advantage of being able to travel and not only perform, but just live with each other for 8 or 9 days on the road.
Right.
You know, that coalesces a group in a completely different way. The music making is at the core of it. A new student coming in, hardly any of them have been playing in a band as good as the St. Olaf band, you know?
Right.
And so it's a step up into a whole new musical world as well. And you feel everybody else working super hard and you go along with that. You can't help but.
The music genre is something that's very fascinating to me because I've heard a few different people describe it as music mimics the flow of life in a sense. Particularly, it can be a sort of transcendent experience almost, especially with instrumental music where you have all these wacky things that can go on in a lot of different ways. What do you think is the central underlying theme at the heart of the St. Olaf musical experience, if that question makes sense. It's a big question, so.
Yeah. I think what we're trying to do is to pick some of the most expressive repertoire that we have available to us to say important things about the world we're living in today. I'm speaking as a composer just as much as a programmer slash conductor who puts concerts together. We have this opportunity to take people along for the ride. You know, they come to the concert, they sit in a darkened hall, they're not talking to each other, they're just letting music talk to them. And it's a different language, and it pulls on your emotions and your heartstrings in a perhaps a different way than just me blathering on and lecturing you about something. You can feel it. You can experience it in a different way. You can do that when you go to the museum and stand in front of a great painting or a sculpture or go to a play or whatever. The arts go directly to the heart of the matter. Personally, I've taken that on as a rather serious part of my programming in the latter years. I you can see it in the kind of music that I write and the kind of programs that I put together. I try to walk a very careful political tightrope.
Sure.
Because it can't go politically. That doesn't work. But you can get people to think about issues.
It's kind of crazy when you think about it how thousands of people who don't know each other for the most part will go to a concert and sit in seats and listen to music, you know. That's mm-hmm. What were some of the broader life lessons that you learned when you were in the band as a student, and how did that inform your musical experience moving forward?
My time in the St. Olaf band built upon my time with the La Crosse Blue Stars, a drum corps. I marched in the very first DCI, the Drum Corps International, big international championship and so on. You know, and so during my 9th and 10th grade, I learned a work ethic that I felt just nurtured and fostered in new ways when I got into the St. Olaf band. I learned so many things from the great teachers that I had, certainly Miles Johnson, my predecessor, Daryl DeYoung, my trombone instructor, and Art Campbell, my composition teacher, and so on. We have a strong faculty up there, and they all have great things to contribute to refine your own aesthetic sense.
Yeah, St. Olaf is, I would argue, world-renowned for its musical programs, and every testimony I hear, including yours, lives up to that standard, I would say, of providing that experience for students. You had about a 10 to 15-year break between being a student at St. Olaf and coming back as the conductor, so what was your life like in that in-between period?
Oh, exciting and fun, just what the 20s and, you know, are supposed to be for somebody, early 30s. I had a 3-year run at Malacca High School. It's about an hour north of here. And I ran 2 concert bands and a marching band and a jazz band. And I also went up and taught middle school lessons, you know, in the mornings and stuff. Small community, 3,000 people in the community. And then I went to the University of Iowa, go Hawks. You know, for my master's work in trombone, I wanted to get better personally as a performing musician. And I knew that as a conductor, I needed to ground the decisions I make musically on decent musicianship. And when I was down there, I had a chance to work with the Hawkeye Marching Band and write drill charts and go to the Peach Bowl at that 1983 or something like this, you know, yeah. Or 82. Just wonderful experiences. Decided to go back there to finish my doctorate after 4 years up at UMD. The job at the University of Minnesota Duluth opened up. I was getting a master's degree. I threw my papers in. I got lucky because my first band piece got published, and so I was a published composer, you know, when I went to interview.
That's a big step.
And I had been teaching in northern Minnesota for 3 years, so I knew some of the people, and, you know, it made sense to hire me, I guess. And I taught there for 10 years. I took a leave of absence during that time to go do a doctoral residency year. And then when Miles Johnson, Mighty Johnson, retired, I decided to take a look at it. I tell this story that Carolyn Jennings, the department chair at the time, called up like 2 days before the cutoff date for application and said, are you going to apply? I didn't know if I should even be applying because I revere the St. Olaf Band from being a member of it and loving Mighty Johnson and so on. And, you know, who am I to think I'm the guy who might be able to come in and do this? You know, there was a lot of, you know, fear and trepidation. But the encouragement was there, so I threw to a package together and sent it down by FedEx or whatever and got it in time.
Overnighted it.
Yeah, yeah. This was before you could count on sending files electronically yet. Yeah. So, yeah.
The power of email had not yet been realized. So then what was your reaction when they called you with the news that you were going to be the seventh conductor of the St. Olaf Band?
Yeah, yeah. It was very exciting. Humbling. A proud moment. You know, I'd worked really pretty hard to get myself to a position where I might actually be able to apply for something like that. Scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh my God, what did I just get myself into, you know?
A tinge of trepidation, yes. As you mentioned, maybe a little bit more than a tinge at times. I think that's the mark of a great teacher, actually, though, because you have to have some amount of anxiety going into a situation like that. But you can use that energy to fuel your ambitions further, I guess you could say, in a certain sense. By the time that you've learned all of these musical techniques and you're ready to apply them at St. Olaf, Mighty Johnson has been there for over 40 years, I believe. Over 30 years, excuse me.
Yeah.
Yes. And so he's really instilled tradition into the band. So how did you go about approaching that position with regards to some of the more traditional aspects that Mighty brought in and also even earlier, like Chris Johnson and so forth?
Well, there's a couple different avenues that come to mind here. One would be just the social construct of the band, you know, what's going on within the sense that they have for membership and activities and stuff like that. And then there's certainly the musical avenue as well. I liken this to being handed the keys to a really nice, expensive car. And you get in and you just don't try anything new. You know, you just see if
play
you can.
Play it safe.
Can I drive it? You know? And so for the first year, it was just sort of, okay, how did Mighty do this? You know, and I encouraged Henry Dorn, my successor here. You know, we've had a lot of discussions about how things had been done, so he knows how they had been done. And I encouraged him to just be patient with any changes. I expect him to make changes. I hope he does. It needs to become his group, and I'm in full favor of that. And so far, so good. I mean, I just heard them at the National Conference of the College Band Directors National Association down in Texas at Texas Christian University, and they brought the house down.
That's awesome.
Yeah, standing ovation. It was a moment of great pride for
me. Was there like a particular lesson that comes to mind when you think of what Mighty taught you during his years instructing the band?
Yeah, you know, he had a couple of sayings that I've continued to use. One is speed is cheap. And what he was getting at is that when you have really quick music, technically demanding music, people tend to try to go as fast as they can and they're not quite as clean as they can be. And if you slow it down by 8 clicks on the metronome or something like this, all of a sudden they can just be more enunciated and clear with their expression. And that sounds quicker because it's cleaner. Rather than this gush of, you know, it's like taking a drink from a fire hydrant, you know.
Right.
It just doesn't work sometimes. That's one of the things that I learned from him. I learned just to have a deep respect and love for the core sound of the band. I took that band during my 29 years with them. I kept trying to refine the quality of the tone within each of the sections. We sort of adjusted the numbers that we had on different instruments. I had the band get a little bit bigger. I wanted a little bit of a bigger sound to mess around with. And I also wanted to increase the opportunity for this experience for the number of students that we have. When we went to Japan in my last year, was basically how big are the buses? And we'll just fill 2 buses. There's no reason to not only take 88 when I could take 94.
Yeah.
I mean, plus at this time, the Lewis and Mary Kay Smith Fund had kicked in and they traveled for free. And
That's a nice bonus.
Oh, you bet. And so the St. Olaf Orchestra and the band and the choir all traveling abroad once every 4 years for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a wonderful opportunity for them. Yeah, it's been an interesting kind of thing. I pick up the band in 94 and just hopeful of, you know, having it keep growing and so on. And as you have one success after another happen musically or otherwise, you get bolstered in your confidence and your envisioning can grow and shift a little bit. What can we get away with? What can we try? And it's just, it was a fun ride. I mean, it ended up, it's not in the book here because it happened after the end date of the book, but we won the American Prize.
Yes,
you know,
I
won't even say remarkable. I think it's just a wonderful recognition of where they're at.
How rich the history has been in order to get to there, in a sense, as well, because mm-hmm. there've been a lot of players that have impacted the band and allowed them to be recognized on that scale, I guess you could say.
Yeah, so, you know, there's that saying about standing on the shoulders of giants.
Right.
And it's just been, you know, we had, you know, like 125th year of the college tour, and now it's the 150th year going on now.
That's
but,
crazy.
You know, it's just the rich tradition of support for music making, in particular on that campus.
And now that you're retired, I guess you could say you're one of the giants. Yeah, I hope that they aren't hurting your shoulders too much. But as you found your rhythm in conducting the band, a lot of you can tell that a lot of the past conductors, you can kind of see how they approached the style of where to take the band based on what musical selections they decided to pursue. So did you do any kind of switcheroos on what the accepted scale of musical ambitions the band had been undertaking was, or did you introduce some new stuff to toughen it up?
Yeah, this is an interesting thing to talk about. But first of all, I have to say Badum Ching, because you said when I found my rhythm.
Yes.
And I just had to get that in there.
Yes, I partially intended that as a pun, so I'm glad you picked up on that.
No, what's really driven the growth of the bands in the nation, let alone the St. Olaf band, is the kind of repertoire that's been being written for it over the past 30 years or so. Mighty Johnson got in on it in particular. There was a certain kind of quality of construction and so on with the compositions up through the 50s and 60s, and we have this old stuff from like the early 1900s and the British traditions and things like this. And then all of a sudden, more and more of these fine contemporary composers are realizing that the wind band is a pretty cool collection of instruments. They're really good. They like to rehearse much more than the orchestras do. And I can really experiment and have fun. And we have Pulitzer Prize winning composers writing for us now. And that's been one of my thrusts, you know, supported by the fact that I'm a composer myself, is this creation of new music. So we were involved with lots of commissions, both with big name composers, up and rising composers, student composers.
Lots of opportunities.
Well, I was given opportunities when I was in the band. I got to conduct the band my senior year on tour. I had a chance to have a piece of mine performed on by a brass quintet on one of the concerts. And, you know, I saw Mighty Johnson making opportunities happen for students. And I said, well, this is exactly what needs to keep happening.
Right.
And, you know,
that was kind of foreshadowing your eventual career at the band, being able to conduct your senior year mm-hmm. and have one of your pieces played. Susan, Jeff, and I did a general overview of what the 90s, 0s, and 10s looked like. Are there any particular highlights that you want to mention from that era that stand out to you?
I think one of the pinnacle moments was the concert at Carnegie Hall. Mm-hmm. I mean, understandably so.
2016, that was,
yep.
I believe.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we had David Maslanka, one of the great composers, writing a piece for us entitled Angel of Mercy. And it was just a really comfortable sense up on stage. We knew we could do this. You know, mm-hmm. Here we are in Carnegie Hall. It would have been so easy to just get freaked out by that. The whole floor level was full. The top first ring of the balcony was pretty full. Well over 1,000 people there. Just from the opening sounds, you could just feel everybody just relax. And it's like the blinders of a horse come on, you know, and they just got focused. Felt like it went by in 15 minutes instead of almost 2 hours.
Right.
You know, it's just this unbelievable moment. We had an incredible tour to Mexico where we brought instruments down to start up a small band in a teeny little town, you know, mm-hmm. and had that up in the mountains, that whole experience. San Miguel Zinacapan is the name of the community.
And that was in 2004, it looks like, the interim in Mexico.
Yep. You're a well-read person. I wonder how many people have actually read this book. What I found, as an aside, interesting is that Susan in particular almost listed all the repertoire of every performance. But what I found from talking to the people who own the book, who are the alums, they just need to read a title and it brings back a flood of memories. Not just the musical memories, but the people who were around them in the band. What fun.
One thing that I think was really cool was, and the book articulates this, is I don't remember exactly when it started, but it definitely continued throughout your tenure, was that each year, each tour kind of had a theme that I thought was pretty neat. I think one year, this might have been under Mighty, I don't recall necessarily, but I think one year was like themes from Broadway shows, which is one in particular that I think would have been pretty fun to see.
That shows the influence of Myrna.
Myrna Johnson, founder of the Arts Guild.
You bet.
Yes, and it was funny enough, I don't believe I ever met her, but I've been involved in the Guild in a couple different capacities, and I didn't realize that she had been married to Mighty until I read this book, so it's like, wow, these connections. Picking up on that thread about the book, Susan told me that you were the one who approached her about writing it. Mm-hmm. What was that process like of having an idea like, oh, there should be a biography about the band, too, sitting here with it on the table?
Yeah, you know, I just felt it was a great story, having people understand the mission of the college. What has this college been about? And that kind of thinking behind it. And I also just wanted to acknowledge the great music making that had been going on for such a long time. I knew that the archives were full of valuable information and they just needed to get pulled together. And I had this chance to read some of Susan's writing.
Historic happenings and so forth.
Yeah, and all of those kinds of great articles and her interview of me. And then I knew Jeff from being up on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And he really sort of got interested when the 2016 anniversary came around. It was a lot of fun and two completely different writing styles. I imagine you noticed that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it is different, for sure.
Yeah, Jeff has a wonderful way of, you know, making things from a century ago come alive in your mind.
And appear relevant in some way.
Yes. Yeah. And then Susan just became this voracious researcher.
Right.
And we were pulling together all sorts of print documents that supported the and resources and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think that the writing styles definitely fit the eras quite well also, because Jeff covered the first 66 years, I think, where there's not as much material to work with. And so he has more of like a looking at it from more of a bird's eye view. And then Susan gets into the nitty gritty details with each year and highlights the successes of all of those different eras. So what was it like when it came out in 2019?
Well, it was pretty amazing, to be honest with you. First of all, it existed in a draft with one of those ring binders that's about a 2-inch circumference, you know, to hold it all together. Because the thing, what is it, like 600 pages
or so? It is 600 pages, believe it or
not. You know, and so it's quite the book. It was just really gratifying to see it all come together after years of work. Mm-hmm. Very proud moment as well.
Of course, you were intimately involved in the process, not just spurring the momentum for it to happen, but also you were interviewed, I'm not sure how many times, because you're quoted a lot in that book. But
oh, well, starting with Mighty's years, there was a meeting for every year. So 1957 to 2018.
That's crazy.
Or just about one for every year.
Mm-hmm.
And delightful. Susan would come up to the office and she'd have a bag bag full of goodies that we would look through and talk about. And she taped everything on an old cassette player. And
the old-fashioned way of journalism.
Yeah. And it was a time of reminiscence, a time of discovery. I was learning things that I had not heard of, so on. So it was really a remarkable thing in that regard. And I'm thankful that it's now established and in book form. And I've got colleagues from the college world who have picked up the book. They want to understand the programming and the heritage of it. And they appreciate what the St. Olaf Band represents as a strong artistic ensemble. And how did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the book. This is how it happened.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's really representative of Northfield in some ways, especially in the early days when Northfield wasn't really known. St. Olaf Band really put them on the map in a lot of regards, and especially when they did the 1906 tour to Norway,
mm-hmm.
very historic in its own right. By the way, I should mention that this was published and written when you were still a conductor at St. Olaf,
yes.
So I imagine your schedule was pretty busy between interviews and conducting and tours and whatever else fills your time. So speaking of that, the book ends in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So can you fill us in on what happened with your last 5 years or so with the St. Olaf Band?
Well, there was this thing called a pandemic.
Really? Fill me in on that.
Yeah. The year after, 2018, 2019, was sort of a nice, normal, great year. Mm-hmm. And then we got to 2019, 2020, mm-hmm. academic year. We got to that March and everybody got sent home.
Yeah.
You know, and the band basically punted at that point in time. We did big Zoom sessions where I tried to check in with screen after screen to get 90 students on, but just letting them see each other and talk to each other. We would listen to archived performances from earlier in the year to discuss them, what would we improve on and so on. I tried to have it be as musically and academically sound as possible, but that was sort of a punt. You mm-hmm. know, there wasn't any reason
there's not much
to perform
you can do
anymore.
In that regard.
Teaching conducting was also quite the challenge. Composition was much easier. 2020/2021 was the year of 9-foot separation because mm-hmm. our scholars over in Europe recommended 9 feet rather than 6 feet because of the wind instruments. Some of those early pandemic problems were choir rehearsals and things, if you
right.
recall. And so we had masks. I went through a period of time where I was the guinea pig. We had a person making different kinds of masks and trying different zippers and different kinds of openings. And I would uh-huh. play my trombone and film myself
yeah.
doing it and send them feedback.
You were
so
an experiment
on.
Subject.
Yeah, regular guinea pig with a trombone.
Right.
We were fortunate in that the athletic department also needed to close down that year. You know, they weren't competing. And so we were able to get into Skoglund on Saturdays. This was a good thing. If you know the St. Olaf campus at all, they have the pause up there.
Okay.
I could split the band in half and have one half come for part of a rehearsal, one half for the other part of that rehearsal. And that would happen once a week or something like that. In the band room, I could have 25 people at a time spread out. And each time I balanced them so they'd sort of make it a little band, you know. And then on Saturdays, we could throw them all together, and our performances were in concert black with lighting, a video recorded down in Skoglund, and sort of put together that kind of presentation. Now, I'm really proud of what we did. We presented a concert that was 3 premieres, all female composers, and it was just, this is exactly what we were supposed to be doing. You know, and I didn't say, hurrah, here's a concert of 6 female composers. It was just, this is our next concert. And it was one of the hardest pieces we've ever done. And so to have that happen during this pandemic era is something that I'm really proud of those students for, because it wasn't an easy thing to do.
Right.
And then the next year we were able to get back out on the road. We were still wearing the masks and eventually pulled out of that. We got to my last year and it was just an absolute delight. We were sort of released from the mask. We were still wearing it in the fall, but the time we got to the spring, we were sort of beyond that then. And that ended up being a wonderful opportunity with a performance at the state convention. And we had a domestic tour out to California, and then we went to Japan. My last concert with the St. Olaf Band was in Japan. It was not here.
Susan Vistendahl tells me you're a rock star over there.
Well, it's because I'm me.
No, of course.
They've appreciated my music. My music preceded me being there. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I've been published since the early 80s,
mm-hmm.
1983 or so. And I've had a chance. I've been to Japan maybe 5 or 6 times now, conducting in conferences and so on. They knew my music.
Mm-hmm.
And so that helped bring crowds to the concerts, and we already would have had it anyway. They love concert bands over there. They'll be a line 2 blocks long, an hour ahead of the concert, ready to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Over here, we don't get that same kind of following at all.
What was it like then as you approached your final year with the band? Had you known that you were going to retire at the end of that year, and what was it like?
Yeah. I actually, there's a deal up at St. Olaf and on a number of campuses where you notify them of the impending retirement.
Mm-hmm.
They give you a little pay bump for during your last year. That helps Social Security with the figuring that they do. And it's like a little nice little bonus at the end of your teaching career. And it gives them the chance to operate a full national search and do it properly and all the ducks in a row,
mm-hmm.
for the transition. And I couldn't have been more pleased to have found out that Henry Dorn was one of the 3 finalists. I'd heard of his name because of 2021. He was one of the composers at the Conducting Institute with the Minnesota Orchestra. So I knew him as a composer, not as a conductor at all. And I didn't really know him, but I checked out all the 6 composers or whatever it was. And, you know, here's Henry Dorn. I listened to his music. I thought, this guy's got a lot on the ball. And then I found out he was one of the 3 finalists. I had nothing to do with the search. I thought, oh, my Lord. I didn't know he was, you know, from the band world as well. I watched the video recordings of each of the candidates, and all 3 were really strong. Henry came out on top, and I'm really glad that it did.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a smooth transition for him, I think. A lot of good student leadership helps that happen. It certainly did when I came in after Mighty. There's a wonderful governance within that band that dates back before I was a student there, probably. And it's, you know, just a president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, and student managers. And, mm-hmm. and they're voted on. And Mighty just said, stay out of the way. They always pick the best people.
Right.
And by and large, that was always true. And so that kind of student leadership really helps smooth over those transitional periods.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Henry Dorn has continued to lead the band to success. I was able to tune into a virtual concert that they had, I think, in March. And I could just tell that he felt very comfortable with the band, with the audience as well. I think he had to fill some time or something. So he was just talking to the audience,
yeah.
And he's just kind of a natural in that regard. So I'm glad to hear that St. Olaf found a worthy replacement. You still go to concerts and keep an eye on the band?
Only a fool would miss a St. Olaf band
right?
concert.
Of course.
That's the way I look at it. Well, first of all, I commissioned a composer and had Henry choose the composer so that he could premiere a piece during his first year with St. Olaf Band Endowment Funds. And then he also had his composition teacher, a guy named David Biedenbender, create a piece entitled Enigma that they premiered on their tour in Henry's first year. And that has since won a national prize.
Wow.
And they presented that piece in front of the national audience down in Texas when I was there. And so, once again, the St. Olaf Band does something that just puts them on the map with the band world of the nation.
Well, we've done a pretty extensive overview of the last couple of years here. Before I let you go, though, I always do this thing with my guests called the rapid fire round.
Okay.
If you're up for it. It sounds ominous, but everybody's made it through unscathed so far. So lightning round, just quick questions followed by quick responses.
Sure.
So, all right, here we go. First of all, go to orchestral piece of music for performing.
Oh, Mahler 2, Peter Grimes, the 4C interludes of Peter Grimes, written by Benjamin Britten, lots of the Mahler.
Mahler's great.
Yeah.
You
know, it's just Schwantner and some of the contemporary stuff, Corigliano. I find that I don't listen as much as I used to because I'm trying to hear my own music. And right now, I've written 8 pieces since retiring, 5 band works this year, and I'm in a little bit of a break right now and loving it. I'm not writing. I'm not letting it in. I'm actually letting my head come up and see what's going on wow. in the world
Good
and
for
listen
you.
A bit. You know? Mm-hmm.
Favorite non-instrumental music genre?
Oh, I like Irish folk music. Mm-hmm. I have no Irish blood in me at all, but mm-hmm. I resonate with that music.
Favorite non-Oli band? And this can be collegiate, instrumental, non-instrumental.
I have to be very careful here.
Yes, lots of places are vying for the endorsement from Dr. Timothy Marr.
I tell you, the one that there are so many professional bands and high-quality bands and so on, but the one that impresses me quite a bit is Baylor University. They get it. And Texas is super strong. The high schools and so on are just crazy about the kind of effort they make with mm-hmm. marching band and concert band and contests and so on. So these are really technically proficient groups, but Baylor gets the heart.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for your time today, Dr. Marr. This is the end of our podcast portion of Trek Through Time. I'll set up the video cameras in just a sec here so we can look over what
very
you
good.
Brought for me. Summing up the impact of the band from a perspective of someone who knows it better than anybody, what would you say is the central underlying principle that has guided the band since 1891?
I think it's always been to be able to serve the art of music to the best of their ability, find really great repertoire to share with other people, and have it be convincingly delivered so that the art speaks to them. The highest compliment I can pay anybody at a recital or something like this is that you helped me connect with Tchaikovsky or Beethoven or whoever. I forgot you were performing. I was into the piece of music that you were, you know, sharing with me. That's the highest compliment as far as I'm concerned.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for trekking through time with me today.
Very good.
Yes, I enjoyed our conversation.
So did I.
Well, I hope I can accurately proclaim that I am a semi-expert in the St. Olaf Band, now having read the book and spoken to 3 true experts on the topic. So thank you very much to Dr. Timothy Marr for coming on the show today, for providing an intimate look into his time with the band and what they've been up to lately. It was a very illuminating conversation also about the power of music and art. So thank you very much, Dr. Marr. It was great to meet you. Also, thank you to Sean Allen, Mark Thornton, and Alexis Kraft at the Northfield History Center, Rich Larson at KYMN Radio, and also to Susan Vistendahl and Jeff Sove for not just being my guests on the previous show, but also suggesting Dr. Marr as a guest and hooking me up with the appropriate knowledge that I need in order to interview him. And also my parents, in part because they bought me the book, The Milestones and Memories of the St. Olaf Band, 1891 through 2018, for Christmas, which I greatly enjoyed, and I would highly recommend it. It has a Cosmos Book Club stamp of approval on it now. Not really, but I hope to get that printed at some point. You can buy it at By All Means Graphics, the Northfield Arts Guild, the Northfield History Center, and Graphic Mailbox. Check it out. It's well worth a read. And of course, I always close out the show by highlighting a pioneer of the past, but sometimes I cheat and do several, which is what I will be doing this time. It's an 8-way tie for all of the conductors of the St. Olaf Band throughout their history. From F. Mealy's Chris Johnson, to Miles Mighty Johnson, to Dr. Timothy Marr, and now to Dr. Henry Dorn, each conductor has left their mark on the organization and furthered a sense of identity and camaraderie within the band as an institution. It's really quite remarkable to see each conductor's particular successes and achievements that they accomplished while they were with the band, and what that meant for St. Olaf and Northfield as a whole in many respects. From Chris Johnson overseeing the 1906 Norway tour, to Dr. Dorn conducting the band in their commencement celebration later this month, May 24th at 1 o'clock p.m. on Melby Lawn, if you're interested, each conductor has encouraged the band and its members to aim higher.
something truly integral to the process of creating a collaborative musical community and providing extraordinary experiences for students of every era. Finally, I would like to say congratulations to everyone graduating this month, whether that's from high school or college or their time with the St. Olaf Band, because now you have a prime opportunity to go out there and make history happen. This has been Voyage 14 of Trek Through Time. I'm your host, Cosmo Esplin, and I'll see you back here next month. Until then, indeed remember to make history happen.